listening to Bikini Drive-In. Today I'm joined again by Sarah Atnikov. Thank you so much for being here and for talking about vampires with me this month.
Thanks for having me.
I can't wait to fight with you about this movie.
This might be the last time I'm ever on the show.
Yeah. Bikini Drive-In's mission is to analyze horror and science fiction films through an intersectional feminist lens while combining elements of screening media studies, arts criticism, and women and gender studies. Since we'll be discussing portrayals of horror and violence, content warning, listener discretion is advised, etc. Also, spoilers ahead. On our final day of Vampire Month, we are discussing Francis Ford Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Here occurred the frightening and shocking history of Prince Dracula and the woman he loved.
I have crossed oceans of time to find you.
Yeah. Dracula.
There's a sinister, darker side to him. I find irresistible. I've never met any man with such a passion for life. He is unlike any man.
What are you?
Vampires do exist. This one we fight, this one we face, can take on many forms. He is both young and old. He can appear as mist, as vapor, as the fog. And he can vanish at will.
Oh, my love.
The power of his evil desire has no end.
You've got to go to him. And you've got to love him.
She is a willing recruit, a devoted disciple. She is the devil's concubine. Dracula!
Join me in eternal life. Your salvation is his destruction.
I want to be what you are. I want to see what you see. I want to love what you love.
And take me away from all this death.
Make no mistake, he must be stopped.
Dracula, the 15th century prince, is condemned to live off the blood of the living for eternity. A young lawyer, Jonathan Harker, is sent to Dracula's castle to finalize a land deal, but when the count sees a photo of Harker's fiancée, Mina, the spitting image of his dead wife, Elisabetta, he imprisons him and sets off for London to track her down. So, just before we get started, both Sarah and I are aware of the abuse allegations against Gary Oldman by his ex-wife. We just want to state that we're not interested in romanticizing him as a person at all, and that we believe victims. We just want to discuss the characters and the movie itself.
So
Sarah, what is your history with Bram Stoker's Dracula?
It's one of those weird films that I feel like has always been a part of my life. Mm-hmm. Like, we had been talking about this, and like you, I think the first introduction I had to it was from The Simpsons, like, The Treehouse of Horrors. And
yeah, hell yeah.
We'll always forever see Mr. Burns with the two little, like, lumpy humps on his head. and then, like, I can't remember the first time that I saw it, but the actual movie. Mm-hmm. But I remember watching it probably, like, 3 years ago and just not having it. And just being like, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And just, I felt like it was just a testament to, like, unchecked ego and like when you get like a big director in on something. And then I watched it again more recently in prep for this and like had more friendly feelings towards it. I wasn't so just like eye roll the whole time. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I've always thought that it was such a beautiful movie. Like, his costume when he's in the war and afterwards, it's just like what it looks like muscle kind. It's just so cool. That's like one of my favorite things ever. But it was just like the special effects that really did me in with it. But I watched, Steve provided some like, you know, documentary info, and there's a couple of like the making ofs on YouTube, and I watched them, and there was one in particular that I thought was really interesting, and the way that he talked about it, like the time that it was happening was the time when like film and cinema was first sort of coming to light.
Yeah, definitely like the era of gadgets and
exactly. So like trying to do things the way that they may have done things there, mm-hmm. and then like learning that this was all shot on a soundstage, mm-hmm. and all of these sort of things, it gave me more of an appreciation for it. But I still have kind of mixed feelings because like if you aren't in on the like inside joke, mm-hmm. to be able to fully enjoy something, like is it effective? Like, you know, if you is my like enjoyment of it, like the fact that I do like it and have an appreciation for it more only because I've done this kind of research, mm-hmm. on it, like is that necessary? Like, are you just trying to be precious and elite and all, mm-hmm. of those kind of things? But yeah, I mean, like there's definitely some characters that I just love, and you know, like poor Wino and the English accent she attempted, and the English accent that they all attempted. It's like it's super super beautiful and like very hilarious in some parts.
Yeah, definitely.
It's pretty great.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, my introduction to the movie was also Simpsons Treehouse of Horror. I don't really remember seeing it for the first time. It's just like one of those movies that has always been in my sort of world and like part of this like collective subconscious or whatever. Since researching vampire films for the show, like Dracula has become my top movie, one of my top movies. Like it's, I'm always just watching it. I watch it to go to sleep. It's just become like a very cozy movie for me.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. I mean, the soundtrack is really great.
Oh yeah, like, the score is amazing.
Really great.
Casting choices are questionable. Sure. I'm obsessed with the costumes designed by Eiko Ishioka. And the production and the sets. It's a very textured movie. And just so, like, risky and imaginative and, like, not at all set in reality. And I think the fact that it's set on a soundstage kind of adds to this kind of, like, cozy, almost, like, claustrophobic uncanniness to it.
Totally.
There's one element of it that I'm kind of, like, confused by, though. So, like, the song choice, which is Love Song for a Vampire by Annie Lennox, was the song, and I believe, like, one...
It won awards. It won things.
But, like, the fact that they wanted to set it in the time of the novel, like, it's a period film, and mm-hmm. filmed it the way that films would have been filmed at that time, why would you choose, like, a very modern song? I don't know, like, the production politics of, like, soundtracks at the time, but it just seems, like, so strange. Such a strange choice. So, do you have a favorite vampire movie or style of vampire? And what would you like to see in the genre?
I just really love Twilight.
I'm just kidding. Twilight has cultural value.
Sure.
Just because teenage girls like it doesn't mean it's shitty.
I don't, I am a full fan of like young adult stuff, but also just because young adult girls like it doesn't mean that it's not.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever. Everybody loves a sparkly vampire.
Yeah.
I really like Let the Right One In.
Mm-hmm.
Let Me In less so because like it always seems that things get lost in American remakes of it. But I really like it because it's about kids, and I enjoy anything that sort of distorts the way that we're supposed to think about how certain people are supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like how cold it is. Like it just is a very very cold. But also like I just really liked it because I thought it was something new that I hadn't really seen.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of love what we do in Shadows because it's just like so silly, and I love stuff that like pokes fun of itself, and you can see like the references to Bram Stoker's Dracula and like Nosferatu and like all those other ones in it, so I appreciate that. I like just because my mom was really into the books, Interview with a Vampire, and I mean like who doesn't love a like despondent, emotional, undead Brad Pitt. We just love Brad Pitt anytime. Yeah. And also, like, Tom Cruise eats a rat, so, like, that's great.
Tom Cruise is big in that movie.
Oh, so God.
He is not a blonde.
No.
He's more of a fall winter, for sure.
Yeah. and then I remember, so one that I hadn't thought about until we were talking about this is Sleepwalkers by Stephen King. That movie is so everything. I remember watching it as a kid, and there's, like, this scene where, like, the mom and the son are dancing, and the song is, like, it gets stuck in my head. And just the fact that they're, like, energy vampires, and, like, that they're these, like, weird cat people, and just the fact that, like, there's so many cameos in that movie, too. It's just, it's, like, everything that is good about bad movies. In terms of, like, what I'd like to see, I probably, like, for those who've listened before, not a surprise, I want to see some, like, non-heteronormative stuff, because I think, like, you know, you're going to be alive forever, and thinking that, like, you're going to be with the same person forever is a foolish idea. Like, I'd like to see something, like, modern day, or, like, a little bit maybe, like, futuristic. Like, any queer, black, POC, something that would just really look like what it's like to live forever and what you could do with it. Because so many of these films are so romantic in heteronormative ways. And they, a lot of them have, like, religious undertones, which is fair because, like, it's, you know, like, in this movie, Francis Ford Coppola was talking about how they took, how they looked at Dracula as, like the fallen angel, like Gabriel.
It's also, like, based off, like, an actual historical figure, too.
So there is, like, it just, you know, it's very easily lends itself to these romantic and, like, religious sorts of stories. But, like, all, like, you know, they've been done.
Let's do something else.
It's just, like, it would be really good to see different kinds of characters in this genre that, like, if you're gonna, you know, like, you have vampires and stuff, and, like, if you can't have, like, a weirdo, queer, whatever, like, where can you?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it would be really interesting to see different type of people and, like, a different Dracula, maybe, live through various eras, and how that experience would be difficult or different or challenging or romantic in different ways or whatever. So Blackula explores this a little bit, but it would be great to see more vampire stories from Black and POC perspectives. Like, I was thinking of, this is TV, but True Blood. So that is set in the Southern United States in Louisiana, and it has, like, vampires who were from that area, but it's all the vampires are white. It's, like, it'd be very interesting to see, like, what a Southern Black vampire would look like and what sort of dynamics they would have to. So I just want to start off talking about Gothic fiction, which is largely known as a subgenre of Gothic horror. It's a genre of literature and film that combines fiction and horror, death, and at times romance. Gothic fiction tends to place emphasis on both emotion and a pleasurable kind of terror, serving as an extension of the romantic literary movement. So the most common of these pleasures among Gothic readers was the sublime and indescribable feeling that takes us beyond ourselves. I think this is shown in sort of Mina's journey throughout the movie. So there are 10 elements of Gothic horror. So set in a haunted castle or house, a damsel in distress, an atmosphere of mystery and suspense, there's a ghost or monster, the weather is always awful, dreaming, nightmares, a burdened male protagonist, which I love. A melodrama, death, and it deals with themes of the beast within. So I feel like Dracula definitely has all that covered.
Checks all those boxes.
Yeah, for sure. So Dracula also feels like an ode to Hammer production films and the films of Mario Bava, such as Black Sunday, Barren Blood, and Planet of the Vampires. So these films are usually filmed on a soundstage rather than on location. They use odd camera angles, psychedelic color schemes, expressionistic lighting, and shock zoom technique, which is very campy and very cool. Another element of these films is that they're very heteronormative, and propriety is always restored, and the good Christian boys win, which is definitely seen in this.
So, like, real life.
And yeah, so I haven't read the book, Dracula, but it seems like Mina's role is very different.
There was no love story, wasn't there?
Yeah, there's no love story, but Dracula still tries to turn her into a vampire, but more as a way to, like, spread the vampire curse rather than like for one true love reasons. Uh-huh. Also, Mina does not kill Dracula at the end. Jonathan Harker and Quincy kill him. So while I was like initially annoyed by the like shoehorned heteronormative romance of this movie, I just feel like Mina plays a much more important role in the film. And she has such an emotional arc, like maybe even more, like just as much as Dracula. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so she's first portrayed as very repressed, very proper, sort of embarrassed by any sort of talk of sex. And as the story goes along, she's briefly able to express her desires and have some agency before order is like quickly restored.
Yeah.
I think. What do you think of that?
I think like that's very, I mean, and I like in watching that documentary, there like the interview with Francis Ford Coppola, he was talking about how like he, because he used to read this book to like the kids that he was the counselor of at a camp, which I'm just like, they were like 9-year-old boys and he's reading Dracula to like put them to sleep. All right. But he was talking about how much he loved the book and how like, you know, there was this, and I'm not like, he always went in the interview, he talks about how he was like, well, the studio, you know, wanted this part of it. So it's like the sort of like between the director and the studio wants like, it'll be more marketable if there's like a love interest.
It also like raises the emotional stakes for sure. And well, it's also similar to like the way Titanic was made in that there's like this love story at the middle of this like grand narrative.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. And I think it like, I mean, it's a way to make it more identifiable to get the gals in the seat because there's a love story.
Again, teenage girls.
They come in and because there's like blood and
yeah.
The lady, the gal who's trying to, you know, test out all the men. Why can't I remember her name?
Lucy?
Lucy! Yeah. God, why had a brain fart there? Yeah, Lucy, who's like, I love her the most.
Oh my gosh. She's so
and
great.
And it's just like her character compared, her like free character. Like there's things in it that happen that are just like so like obviously placed in a way. Like Lucy's just like Lucy Goosey, you know, like ways of being and loving and being so expressive and like about like her men and that there's like three guys that are courting her.
Yeah.
And then, you know, compared to Mina, who's like, you know, super prim, super proper, can't talk about these things. And then they have that like little slow-mo run through the rain. And then like, you know, just to prove that you, if you're not a good Christian girl, bad things happen to you. Lucy gets turned into a vampire and then her head gets cut off and all of these things.
I do find it interesting that Lucy and Mina, they both want to get married, but there's no discussion of like starting a family or having kids, which is like obviously the expectation, but it's like they just want to get married so that they can have sex, so that it's like allowed socially for them.
I like that Lucy's sort of taking her time and she has those three very different options for her that are like, let's just try them out as much as she can.
Yeah.
Giving it all away.
Okay. So yeah, while we're on the topic of like repression and desire and et cetera. So like, Count Dracula is seen as like this kind of like interloper character as he's like this outside threat to proper British society. And I have a quote here from an essay by Christopher McGonagall. My own vampire, the metamorphosis of the queer monster in Francis Ford Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula. So they write, Stoker's novel brought to greatness a war between the establishment of gender roles threatened by the overtly homosexual presence of Count Dracula, who turned women into harlots and men into sissies, before Abraham Van Helsing and his crew of light and the Count's reign of terror to reaffirm their own faltering masculinity. Because, yeah, it is like the status quo is reestablished at the end. There's no longer this, like,
everything goes back to normal as soon as he dies.
I also have another quote by Marissa Mercurio. From an essay called Fearful Desire, Male Homoeroticism in Vampire Media from Dracula to the Lost Boys. Oh, they also make a cool point about the Lost Boys and Dracula at the same time, how there always has to be, like, the female character is, like, the mediator between the two male characters, and, like, because if she wasn't there, then it would be too queer for audiences or for the story.
I would also, like, part of me is, like, would it be, like, too, like, alphas? I mean, and that would be super queer, but, like, would it be, like, is she the one that sort of shows them both that they have, like, human, like, humanity?
Yeah, so she also has this, like,
so many female characters in movies do, regardless of the genre. It's, like, they exist to, like, show that somebody's a human being.
Yeah, another like emotional labor caretaker role.
Yeah, like they're just like, no, what about this? And the other person's like, I never thought about it like that. Yeah. And then it's like, oh, growing, grow.
Yeah.
But this is like, you know, like in all of these, in this movie especially too, it's like flat, like Dracula becomes like a human. Like, mm-hmm. you know, this is where he's not this like weird old withered self mm-hmm. or like a bat or mm-hmm. mist or like a rat king. Mm-hmm. He's like a, you know, a whatever century dandy.
Yeah.
It's like little glasses and like a top hat mm-hmm. and like, you know, talks about like love and lust and all this kind of mm-hmm. stuff. So she exists to humanize him in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also at the end, like when she stabs him right mm-hmm. before she cuts his head off, it's like he's kind of back to his human form.
Yeah.
And he has a soul again. So yeah, 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 that kind of like,
free.
Yeah, these women, female characters are helping them like find their humanity.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. So yeah, so this quote, there's something suspicious about how the text luxuriates in the very expressions it condemns. Sure, the crew of light, which is Van Helsing and Lucy's boyfriends, hunts down vamp Lucy, but it also reads as a thinly veiled sex scene in which her fiancé plunges a stake into her gushing heart. The metaphorical sex act rectifies Lucy's vampiric wantonness, returning her to the proper sweetness and purity of Victorian womanhood. If Dracula wants to police female sexuality, and it does, it nevertheless reveals it as a tantalizing possibility before reifying the status quo. So yeah, even when like Lucy is sick, she's very like breathy and like,
oh, almost,
like orgasmic that and like
whole scene when she and she's like wearing like a red
mm-hmm.
and she's like writhing in bed.
Yeah.
And just like, and like when he like pulls back her collar and sees the two little bite marks, mm-hmm. it's like, oh, just as I suspected, she's like basically like dry humping him.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, just stay away. Yeah. You're like sick.
So it's the same, it's at the same time as it's like titillating and like tantalizing, but also it's like she's, it's condemning.
Oh, for her. Sure. It's like she's like, oh no, she has this affliction.
Mm-hmm.
And she, you know, like this woman who's like a redhead too. Like there's all, like all of these things. I'm like, it's so like, it's very just like obvious in that way of like, you know, she's like vixen and mm-hmm. like, you know, she's always been the sexually liberated one, yeah. and she finds her fate in this way mm-hmm. of like, oh, she had three boyfriends and talked about doing things with them, and then like, you know, Dracula came in and bit her on the neck, and she's all breathy and mm-hmm. like grabbing her boobies and all this kind of stuff, and then like she gets her head chopped off.
Yeah, and even yeah, like when they stake her in the heart, it is very like sexualized,
oh, yeah.
and like,
and he's just like, and he, and like it's like Van Helsing's like telling her boyfriend like
yeah.
how to do it.
Yeah.
Like, it's this yeah. weird, like,
it's weird.
You know, it's a weird
yeah.
dynamic
yeah,
of it, sure. where he's like, you must, it's like Van Helsing couldn't just do it. He's like,
yeah.
no, you have to
oh,
get,
yeah.
like,
yeah, that, that's
boyfriend
too.
To do it. He's like the older, like, daddy.
Yeah, it's so weird. So yeah, so just my last note, I just want to discuss, like, Dracula and sexuality and queerness. So, like, Dracula is considered, like, a very queer story, even though it is, like, such a heteronormative love story.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it's like really interesting that despite what filmmakers' intentions are with their work, that it, like, underrepresented horror fans can still find their own meanings in very heteronormative films.
Yeah.
Like, although it like would be really great to see actual queer text rather than subtext.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just like find it very like, pardon me? Yeah. Like
trying to find something.
Yeah. But yeah, I have a quote here from an essay by Stephen Hoda, Dracula's Greatest Triumph, The Vampire is a Queer Liberator. Stoker's novel undeniably validates and exploits the fear of otherness, yet I find, with a queer reading of Dracula, a relevant metaphor of awakened sexuality, the coming-out process, and the inherent awareness of potential violence borne by queer communities. Dracula is a force that has come to claim and pervert the next generation. He represents the fear of the societal infection by the other. The fear of infection and conversion by the other is one that will be immediately familiar to the queer reader. It is a common fear, faulty narrative that heterosexual cis youth are in danger of being seduced and converted by the LGBTQ community. When discussing Dracula as a narrative of threat to the norm, as Stoker intended, the characterization of queerness becomes painfully clear, dangerous and infectious. The vampire then stands for as a rather chilling metaphor for queer people, one that seeks to tempt, convert, and destroy. So yeah, so like Bram Stoker definitely like didn't mean to make this like a queer story at all.
Mm-hmm.
And Francis Ford Coppola probably not either, but I just feel like because of the themes of otherness, it's always going to be linked to queerness and horror in general too.
Yeah. I mean, like it's so interesting how like the intent of things and then like what they end up as mm-hmm. and what they sort of like morph through the time, like in their lifespan, like who knows, you know, in 20 years what people will think about this movie. Like maybe there will be like even more, you know, overt references to otherness and to queerness that like we're not picking up on now, just because like we don't have the capacity for it. So it's always really interesting to me. And like, I think, you know, like of all of the, you know, if we want to talk about horror monster movies, the like vampire, because they, you know, are for all intents and purposes, like regular humans, like they, you know, like can walk amongst us without people knowing, nothing like it's not like a werewolf where they like change into a beast on a full moon or something. It's like, no, they, you know, they come out at night and it's like, well, like, yeah, that was like my 20s kind of thing. But it's just like, you know, they could be any one of us. And so like the ability to see the, like the queerness in that and the, like, you know, this is something that, that queer folks can identify with as being like, oh no, there's like this, you're equal but different. Or like you seem, but there's like this thing that you have that is different. I think that's something that's super, super fascinating.
Yeah. Or it's like you're seen as a danger.
Yeah. You're seen as a threat. Like with that, it's like, you know, like there's this thing that you have that like, I mean, like all of these things are like, could like, if in another light could be seen as like superpowers or like, you know, as really amazing things. Like you could, like there's an entire beauty industry dedicated to trying to make people look young and live forever. You know, like there's people who are like, suck my plasma out and put it on my face. Like that is and there's like a vampire facial, like there's all of these things. So it's like these, like for all, like, these people, if, you know, vampires are what so many people would want to be. But it's also seen because of their otherness and because they're, like, the perceived threat of, like, what they are and because they have to, like, drink blood and stuff. There's always that.
That perceived, like, infectious.
Yeah, and, like, dirty, bad, all of those things that go along with something that is slightly outside of the norm.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think it's, like, such a great subgenre to explore those like queer themes. But yeah, it would be great to see like an outright like gay vampire movie.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Like just something, I mean, like why not?
Yeah. So yeah, so that's our show this week. Thank you so much for listening. And thank you, Sarah, for exploring vampire movies with me. We didn't really fight that much. yeah, you can listen to Bikini Drive-In every Sunday at 4:30 on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. It's also available on iTunes and Spotify and wherever you get podcasts. If you have any listener questions, I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at bikinidrivein@gmail.com. We also have a Facebook page, Bikini Drive-In, Twitter, Bikini Drive-In. I'm everywhere. It's
all fine. The things.
All the things. Okay, yeah. Thanks.
Bye.
Come into these arms again.
Cruel winds are chill the bone. You're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba. Our frequency celebrates diversity.